Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Ah, the Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
How many bees is a swarm? Is two a swarm or three? Whatever. How many does it have to be?
And I feel like seven.
It's Mike Shope.
How many times do you have to be stung to have been swarmed? And I was like, dude, I got swarmed. I got stung only once, but I was swarmed.
And the bulldog.
You insist you were swarmed.
There were bees, man. Like, plural. Big, lots of S's. Lots of E's and S. Bees. that was not
bees.
Fun.
Bees.
Right. That was not fun.
On WGR.
Hey, man, that kind of hurt.
Sports Radio 550.
From Warren Sharp today. Where do the Bills rate on 4th-and-1 conversion rate? I think it's over 3 years. I'm going to double check that. Last 3 years.
I saw this, and they're surprisingly near the middle. They're in the upper third, but they're not like right. They're not as high as I thought they would be.
Yes,
all I'm really struggling to say here for no reason.
That's the point of my bringing it up. 77%, which ties for 6th in the league. I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
but 77% on 4th-and-1 over 3 years. Just doesn't it feel like you'd want to do better than that?
Yeah, it feels. And even having watched every minute of every one of these games, I feel like it's like a closer to 85% to 90% conversion rate.
Well, you're confusing the Bills for the Kansas City Chiefs, who have 89% conversion rate on 4th-and-1, and they're not a tush-push team.
Well, good for them. They cheated everything else, though, so that's fine.
The number one team is the Rams, and I would never have guessed that. Yeah. I think of McVay as like they would punt on 4th-and-1.
Right. So he's annoying in that way that he gets all this credit for being this sort of forward thinker, but I see him do stuff that I think is really conservative all the time.
Apparently over 3 years, they've gone for it on 4th-and-1 enough times to have a number like 92%. I don't know. That's 10 out of 11.
Yeah, that's no tush pusher. even Stafford quarterback sneaking at all. Like I don't think. I mean,
no.
I don't know if he's one of these guys they don't that just doesn't do that, but I can't see him doing it a lot.
I wonder if it literally is 10 out of 11. Be like 91% rounded up, 92%. Yeah. Is that enough times to have gone on fourth and one over 3 years? For the Rams, maybe it is. It's not like the Rams are bad. I don't know. I kind of want to know now how many attempts that is. How many attempts the Bills in – how many a year? How many times? 10 times a year?
Right.
Do they go on fourth and one? That too.
I know at some point either last year, partway through the year, or looking back at 2023, I remember seeing a chart where the Bills were very high in they get a lot of credit for going for it, but it's not that many attempts. Like and that's partly a function of getting first downs before fourth down, which a lot of good teams do. Just remember being a little surprised by how small the number of attempts overall was. Their success rate is good, but they're not like leading the league in attempts on fourth
downs. No, this year it was 22. Fourth and anything, they went 22 times, made 16. Probably have a couple desperation fourth and longs in there.
Right.
Doesn't count the playoffs. The last offensive play of the playoffs was a fourth down play to Kincaid, the busted play. All right. Too soon? It's April.
I'm okay.
Here's RJ next. Hello.
Hey, guys. Quick question. So why are we so cap-strapped when we really have one true star in our team, being Josh? And other teams say, let's go to KC. And I hate using it every time because it gets cliche. But you got Mahomes. You got Kelce. You got their defensive end, their star defensive end.
Chris Jones, yeah.
And Chris Jones. Where's our other star that's causing us to have so much of a cap hit? Or are we paying a bunch of really good guys a lot of money that we shouldn't be paying them?
I think it's a pretty good point. Knox is the third biggest cap hit on the Bills. I mean, Diggs was part of this, RJ, right? Like
Von Miller was a part of this. That's a part of it.
They ate $31 million to get Diggs off the team. So that contributed to that. And the Chiefs had no such situation. And, it didn't even backfire, really, I would say.
And so we look at that and we say, like Knox. What has Knox done for us? He can block. Do we pay a $14 million blocker? And... we keep getting these old guys on defense that we think are going to star at the end of their career. They're in the twilight of their career. They're not starring for us. They're good, but they're not starring for us.
Well, we'll see on Bosa. That hasn't happened yet. I mean, we'll see.
Right. But I'm okay with the assertion. Like, if you want to compare Miller and Bosa as being similar in that way, I'll buy that. I mean, Bosa's had even more injury trouble than Miller. Miller had big injuries that caused him to miss time, and then a big one here. Bosa's had more like, oh, a week here, 3 weeks there. He's also had one longer time missing being out, but it's been more like nagging stuff, it feels like to me. But still, it works. I don't know. I need to get to the Chiefs page. I've never done this. Like, looked at their table and the Bills table sort of side by side to try to sort of differentiate. But, it stands to reason that what you've got, I don't know if it's that you're paying too much for good guys, but the Bills might have a larger middle class on their roster, right? Whereas the Chiefs have got that high end, right? I've got their table open here. It's Mahomes, Juwan Taylor, Chris Jones, Trey Smith, Travis Kelce. Kelsey's at 19.8. So it's those players, five guys, all around $20 million or more, right? On the Bills' end, it's Allen at 41. That's the only cap hit above 20 currently, according to what I'm looking at SpotTrack.
He and Dawkins are the only two above 15.
Right. And then, you get to... like the middle, there's a little more maybe of the 12 and 10s and that kind of thing, whereas there's more of a drop-off, I think. You get past Kelce with KC, there's a couple of guys in the 10-11 range, and then it's down to like 8-8-8, whereas the Bills are it's a little more spread out, I guess I'd say.
What do the Chiefs rank in dead cap? The Bills are 15th.
They are 23rd.
All right. 13th. And this is going to next year. Last year, the Bills had a pretty big number there.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty comparable. 29.4 is the Bills' number. Oh, they're not. No, I'm sorry. That's not that comparable. Yeah, KC's number is 13. Dead money.
Double. More than double.
And they're sitting on $11 million in cap space right now. Top 51 cap space anyway. The Chiefs are. And the Bills are at 3.6.
It's an interesting point, RJ. Knox is kind of an easy one. He's an okay, he's a good player, but as soon as they did that, I was worried they were going to do it. I remember saying that, and then they did it. I'm like, all right, well, this had to happen. I don't know.
Yeah, Knox stands out. I would have liked to see them move off of Daquan Jones at $9.4 million. That's the cap number there. You know, maybe they're banking on another full year since the pec injury or something, and he's going to be back. But, like, I don't know, man. He's just not been the same guy since he got hurt in that Jacksonville game. Like, he was a havoc-wreaking machine the first 5 weeks or so of that season, and then it just has never really come back. So I was hoping that they might look to upgrade there. No, maybe they still will. If they find the right guy in the draft, maybe they'll find their way to a post June 1st thing with Daquan Jones. But, like, I don't know. Like, looking at it, like you've already said, Knox really jumps off the page when you look at their cap page.
Curtis Samuel at 9.
Yeah.
At 31 catches. Started two games.
Right. The rest of it, like, Connor McGovern, Spencer Brown, Taron Johnson. Like, I don't look at it and think like, oh, I'm overpaying for all these guys or anything. Like those all seem like,
I agree,
you know, reasonable, Oliver, if not too. Even modest NFL contracts.
Oliver too.
Sure.
Little high, but okay.
Yep. So I don't know what to do with it.
Well, there's, you know, the specific question, it seemed like the Bills are strapped. You know, it's the cap space is tight, and that's only been true for last year to this year, right? I mean, 2 years ago, was that the theme? Was like maybe a little bit. It's been long enough. It's actually been long enough where this has kind of been the thing with them. Yeah, I don't know. It's a good point. What's McDuffie? That's the Elam draft, so he might – is he on his rookie deal still?
I don't see him up near the top here, which he almost certainly would be if he had a new deal. His cap number is $4.4 million.
Okay, so he'll get
– he's on – yeah. He's still – right?
Well, they traded Tyreek Hill. And the Bills traded Diggs. Right. They traded L'Jarius Sneed, the Chiefs. This year they've traded Joe Tooney, right? That happened to Chicago, maybe? So they have been –
yeah.
Willing, I don't know what their cap hits are for these trades, but it'd be something. They do get out right. of guys.
They've got, I imagine they picked up the fifth-year option on this player, McDuffie, because he's going into, that happens this year. This
will be his fourth year.
This will be his fourth year, so his cap number is what it is, and they have the, bottom line, they can do a contract with him, is all I'm trying to get to here. Maybe that's coming. At some point here, but they still have a fifth-year option to work with ahead of him becoming, you know, eligible for free agency. So, but maybe he's in line. He certainly should be. Like, he's a guy that should come in above Benford. Like, he might be top of market contract extension when it comes.
Vaughn is a $15.4 million dead money hit. Trey White and, well, Rasul Douglas? Why is he on that list? This is SpotTrack.
I don't know.
He wasn't released by the Bills, right? He was just up?
Yeah, his contract ran out. Yeah.
I wonder what that is. Trey White is, he was released. That's right. 4.1 dead cap. I think that would be right. I don't know on Douglas.
I don't see either of these guys on the list that I'm looking at. I wonder if we're on the same page.
Are you down at the bottom, dead cap?
Oh, yeah.
No. Where they list the guys.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Keaton Bills. Yeah, 16 grand.
Is that the thing with Douglas? That's weird. Like, I understand White and Miller, you know, those are guys that get cut, and there's, you know, dead money and depending. And Tre'Davious White, there was a June 1st designation, I believe, so that's why that carries over a second year. Unlike Diggs, like, he's off the books now, Diggs, because they ate all that in 1 year. I don't know. Maybe that's there. Maybe there were void years or something in Douglas's contract, and that's how that comes up back to bite you. When, you know, in the end, when the player's contract is up, there's still some dead money left there. That's my best guess, because they inherited a him with a contract, haven't given him anything. Unless, did they do something with him last year?
Last March, converted salary plus roster bonus, there adding go. Three void years.
That's it.
That's it.
That's the explanation.
So if you sign him back, does that still count against you? Is he two entries?
Well, I don't know how that works. If you would just fold that into the new deal and then the dead money goes away, I'm not sure how that would work.
You know, I think life is probably happier to be a cap isn't real guy.
Sure.
Just other than the somewhat of an obligation to answer callers' questions right. about these things,
right.
I think it's just not real. Don't worry about it. That's just how, when I, severance, you know, I'll walk out the door and I'll just be, what, salary cap, what? There's no salary cap.
They can do whatever they need to do. Don't worry about it.
Somebody call you about, I don't remember. I don't remember my job. Severance. I don't remember anything about my job. Just, this would be a tough job to be severed. Because you go home and you watch sports and you pay attention to sports and you read about sports and you take notes, 5 pages even perhaps, you take notes about sports, and then you come in here and you forget all of it.
Yeah, that would be tough. Because I sort of like to joke around to a certain extent with my family or my friends, like, you know, well, so what's your day like? When do you start working? I'm like, I'm always working.
Yeah, that's what I say.
I'm working when I'm in
or never.
Whatever. I'm Jerry Seinfeld. I'm observing life, and if there's something worth bringing to the audience, I will do it. So that's how I get away with I'm always working. I'm always thinking, oh, that could be something. Let me make a note of that.
But severed, so you watch the Bills and the Chiefs play for the AFC title. This might be good and bad.
Yeah.
You come in here. You sit down. You're sort of like maybe a little bit confused. The show starts. And I don't know who won. I didn't see that. I don't remember the game.
Right.
It happened last night. I don't know.
I got to open the box score and be like, oh, okay. So if what I'm reading is right here, it looks like they had a chance again to win late. And then something happened with the spot of the ball. And then I don't know.
Could that be a good listen where forget severance, but could it be a good listen to like at 3 o'clock? I'm going to open up the highlights. And I haven't watched the game. I'm just going to watch, you know,
what
live
happened?
On the air, right. The 10-minute NFL package they give you on YouTube.
Right.
And like, oh, just without knowing the outcome.
I have no idea.
I guess there'll be a lot of plays that aren't shown in that.
I'm still not entirely sure that this is a good listen. This is current format. I don't know. Whatever. I don't know if that would be good or not. I'd be willing to try it sometime.
Free agent idea of the day.
Maybe we should try it next
year. Yeah, let's try it. Some Jet game.
Come in blind.
Free agent. I mean, for the Sabres, that's happened a number of times. Free agent idea of the day, Nick Chubb.
Get the hell out of here.
Why? Why is that such a bad idea? Haven't you watched him play? Or you forgot.
I know Sneaky Joe DiBiase will assert that he's the greatest running back in the history of air or something. I don't know. He's broken and used up, and I don't need a running back.
We talked about him on ADP chasing.
Did I do okay?
Fine, it seems makes sense. We talked about him on ADP chasing on Tuesday. That's my podcast on the Ship Chasing Network, Quote Network. It's really fun. And I thought Davis Maddock made the right point on Chubb because I wanted to know if my guys thought him draftable. Like, where he goes, he's so cheap anyway. Like, is there going to be a landing spot for him, and can he still play? And, you know, Davis referenced his injuries, and he's also not efficient anymore before he got hurt again. Last year, he eventually said, look, think about the Browns and the lack of goodwill and just anything, credibility they have right now. You got a guy like that, and you don't want him back?
Says a lot, yeah.
That might be the right point. He was a really likable player to watch. I mean, just like, he super good is right.
Left it all out there. I mean, there was no, yeah. He was Tremendous.
Some big name had the point, he's the best ever. Who was it? Because we both ran, Joe and I both loved it. Like, anything so contrarian sounding like that is, somebody, I forget right now who it was. That's the theme of the segment, forgetting stuff.
Who's the Matt Harmon of running backs? Is that guy out there?
Yeah, I know, right? Somebody like that.
You talk him up.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We welcome to the set Bills cornerback, newly minted with a contract extension, Christian Benford.
Congratulations, Christian.
Yeah, congratulations, man. Really happy for you.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing me on here.
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. Happy to have you.
A lot going on these days.
A little busy.
Yeah.
It was funny, at your press conference a little bit earlier, you were joking about how much your hand was hurting signing your name that many times.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of pages on a four-year contract extension.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to use my left hand for some of it. I had to use my right.
Wait, you can write with both hands?
Yeah.
Are you ambidextrous like that?
Yeah.
Is that?
You're kidding.
Really? How did you do that in school? Like, your hand get tired, you flip over to the other side?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know, like, you know how sometimes you be writing and your hand just like.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But my left
hand. And you just flipped it over, no problem.
Yeah.
Is your penmanship just as good one side with the other?
Nah, it depends. Like, sometimes it just depends on what I'm doing. Like, if I got, like, cursive, I was better with, like, my left.
Okay.
But, like, my penmanship, like, regular, is better with my right.
Gotcha. Wow. Okay. Better cursive writer on the left side. That's
write that down for a trivia question at some point.
That is a good one. I'm going to file that one away. So, congrats. I mean, this is great news. Really happy for you. Did this kind of, in your estimation, not that you've been through a free agent process, but well, not even a free agent, but a contract extension process before, was your agent kind of keeping you informed throughout, or did you just say, call me when it's over? Like, how did you approach that?
A little bit of both, because I don't really want to hear about it too much.
Yeah, because then you're thinking about it all
the
time.
Yeah, but I did have some thoughts. I'd be like, yeah, like, checking up on you, like, what's the word, like, what's the verdict? Mm-hmm. And then he was just like, we talking, be patient. And I was like, all right, yeah, let me just chill. Just let me. I don't really want to hear what it could be, what it is. Like, I want to know, like, when it's time to get put pen to paper, like, all right, let me know what's the verdict. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Am I going to sign it or not?
Yeah. Then it's like, all right, then we could talk. But if it's just like, maybe this, maybe that, like, I don't really try to hear it.
Yeah. Get to a point where it's. It's when,
it's
not if.
It's a smart move. Yeah. I'd say it's a smart move. I've been through that in my career. Because you start out, they're always far apart. And that's disheartening when you kind of think, well, oh, man, you feel like it's never going to get done. But if you just say, listen, call me when it's close. Yeah. Well, call me when you're ready to sign. And then I'll listen to it. That's a smart move.
Yeah.
Because it keeps the emotions out of it. And now you can give Brandon Bean a hug and all that and not worry about that stuff. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So who was the first person you called?
When I found out, or today?
What was the first teammate you called when you found out you're going
to
sign?
Or, more importantly, what was the first teammate that reached out to you when the news broke?
And probably was like this, it was the same ones that like I've been talking to all like this right. whole offseason, like Tern, Sue, Dane, D-Ham, just the same old guy, J-Mark, Kyrie. Just like the same old guys that I've been talking to pretty much for like
this. Kind of DB room, right?
Yeah, yeah, the whole DB room.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. So they reached out to me, my dog Saran, all of them boys, Poe, Micah, T-Rap, the whole nine.
Oh, the whole guy. Everybody.
Yeah, they all like, because we've been all talking continuously. Sure. So they reached out. And the first person I called, though, I didn't really call nobody. But the first person I talked to was my trainer, Montre.
Okay.
That's my guy. And I called my right-hand man, Deshaun. I called him Smoke, but I called him because my girl, she knew already because, like, I was talking to her. She was there. My folks kind of knew already. So, like, I had the people I called was Montre and my guy, Smoke.
Is the guys who were helping you.
Is it a little weird to know that maybe aside from Taryn and Dane, who's coming back and has a year or so on you, you're one of the guys that maybe some younger people are going to be looking to pretty soon for how to do this the right way and do it for a long time? Because I think it's safe to say you're more of a lead by example guy. You know, just talking to other guys, they're like, yeah, we try to get CB to talk a little bit more, but that's just not his nature, and they're cool with it. But, you know, you're a lead by example guy, but now you're one of those guys that a lot of younger players who'll probably be in here in the not too distant future are going to be like, oh, there's, I got to watch Benford. I got to watch him in practice. Like, is that kind of a switch for you? Because
no, not really. I've been trying to help the people that got here. Even like before I even got to the position I'm in, I was always trying to help the people that came in as best as possible, sharing knowledge as much as I know. You know what I'm saying? I don't know everything, so just help them as much as that I know. Like play calls, how to read the offenses, read the receiver stems, stuff like that. And they give me pointers too. You know what I'm saying? I don't know it all. I'm not above nobody. You know what I'm saying? We all equal as men of God. So I wouldn't be nothing different. You know what I'm saying? It's nothing different from what I was already doing.
One of the things that, like, when we last saw you, it was in a Kansas City game. You had to leave the game early. And so how's that all going? Any ramifications, or you feel 100% and all that? What's the word?
I actually feel better than before because I understand, like, body and mind, what it takes to keep my body to where up to par, where it needs to be. Sometimes, like, up top injuries is tough, but I feel better. I feel, like, in a different space because now I really, like, dive into, like, how the body works and what I need to consume and put into my body for longevity, how to make sure I'm straight. Sometimes stuff just happens, though. But what you feel in your body can prevent the outcome.
All right, so with that in mind, does that mean the fruit roll-up pregame is going away, is that still going to be? That is a pregame ritual you're talking about. I just wanted to make sure. Like, that's the fruit roll-up stays. That's going to be in the locker on game days.
Yeah, I need that fruit roll-up and M&Ms.
obviously we've seen guys get concussions all the way. I had a bunch when I played. You gonna change helmets, all that? They give you advice on that? You gonna take a little extra care? Say maybe one extra thing you can do.
No, I'm not.
Nothing like that. Yeah, no. You don't worry about that. Yeah,
we know the roster undergoes change every offseason. It's just the way business runs here in the NFL. What are your thoughts about kind of the secondary thus far, Christian? Because you know they got D-Ham back. I know you're excited to have Dane back in the fold as he comes back from Carolina. Just what are your initial thoughts as you're starting to see the pieces come together? Because I would imagine you guys, like, you want to know how it's going to look sooner rather than later, but you understand the offseason takes time.
Yeah, I'm actually excited to continue to play with the people I came in here with, you know what I'm saying? Especially, like, it hits different when I play with D-Ham because when I first got in here, we wasn't ones, like, we wasn't starting.
Yeah.
We had to really, like, grind to get where we at. And, like, it was always me and him on the same side for some odd reason, you know what I'm saying? And so, like, I know how he played, and not to single him out, but you brought the name, and it kind of, like, sparked that memory. Like, all the times in camp, we talked to each other, like, all the walkthroughs when we was in the back, we were like, yo, it's gonna be us, like, one day.
Yeah.
And then we gonna help impact people around us too. You know what I'm saying? But once our time come, like, we gonna take it and run with it. And we've been like that since I got here. Like, right. First camp. And it feels just different. So I'm excited though, outside of him, to see the new parts come together. The end goal. So they hear, obviously they know the mission. They hear, yeah, win that Super Bowl, work as hard, be a family, you know what I'm saying? Nobody got no ignorant aura to them, no ignorant energy, just no selfish energy. We all got a one mission, win the Super Bowl, be better,
yep,
as men on and off the field, and get that ring.
How do you feel that vibe? I mean, because obviously you guys got one right to the doorstep this last year, which is further than they've been since you know what I mean? You're getting closer.
Mm-hmm.
What's the vibe like in your locker room when you guys interact about, you know, what's next for you, what the, you know, climb the mountain? You got the draft coming up, and I know veteran players kind of take some interest in what the team does, obviously. What's the vibe in the locker room like about you guys, your season last year, and then what you're looking forward to?
We all know what it feel like. You know what I'm saying? We all got a taste of it. So, like, everybody was already hungrier. But, like, now it's like we got a little more edge to us now because we know what it feel like. Like, back to back, like, you know where, like, that taste, you, like, it's on the tip of your tongue. But you need, like, you want to get it there. You want to get there. You know what I'm saying? So, like, we already got, like, hard workers in the locker room, people that's, like, busting their tail in the film room, smart guys. But now it's like, all right, it hit different now. Like, I know that you, the man sitting next to me, like, he works hard. He felt what I felt. So now in the locker room, it's like, it's more like a brotherhood even more now, because now we know what each other want. So if anything go wrong, it's easy to pick each other up. Like, yo, you remember what we went through?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what the goal is. Like, you know what's up, Brody. So I feel like we tighter now. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And again, we all coming back together.
Yeah.
Well, some of us. But
yeah, right.
With the new contract, you know, knowing, and you even said in your press conference, this is not going to change me as a self-motivated player that's always trying to be the best. So that's admirable enough in and of itself. But, you know, we know that there were some trials in your upbringing. It was never always easy.
Yeah.
To be able to provide for your family in a way that you never have before, how gratifying, rewarding is that for you, just knowing you can provide an untold amount of security for your family going forward? I have to imagine that's got to feel very rewarding.
Yeah. I feel a lot of gratitude from God that gave me the blessing to have what I have, because I always pray every night to help my family, make a change in my family, build a legacy. As men, that's what we're supposed to do, lead and make a legacy. So it's mad gratitude. I'm mad appreciative from the man above. And that also that, like, my hard work on top of him, my hard work is paid off, you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes, like I said earlier, you could work as hard as you want. You work all these hours, all that time, building a different version of you. And sometimes the outcome is just not your favor. You know what I'm saying? And that's like, we all know that feeling. And that hurts.
Yeah.
Like, you do all that time sacrificing, sometimes sacrificing family from the people that you love to get where you want to be at. And sometimes it just don't fall through how you want to. And that hurts. Because it's like, yo, what am I doing this for? You know what I'm saying? But I kept God at the center, kept God first, kept praying, and kept staying true and believing. And it feels good. And again, I'm just grateful that it came through how it came through, that I could change my family life, my future children's life, my future wife's life, and I'm like, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like that.
Yeah, it's great.
So when you sat down, I teased you about, you know, a lot going on, not just, you know, signing a contract. You've been busy with another project. You got an April 22nd, you got a book coming out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
It's called Style Safari, The Adventure of Being You. It's a kid's book. outside of the title being The Adventures of Being You, it's to teach kids, like, it's okay to wear what you want to wear, to do what you want to, not do exactly what you want to do respectfully, but to be you, bro. Like, God made you who you are for a reason. You know what I'm saying? And you shouldn't be wanting to be like somebody else. You shouldn't want to be like those people that you see on Instagram. You should be a version of yourself, the best version of yourself. And I want to, with this book, I want to teach kids, like, it's okay to wear what you want to wear. Kind of sometimes, like, my kids, I would try to give them, like it started because, like, I would try to give them, like, Nikes, like, Nike shoes or something. Like, yeah, all right, these shoes nice. Like, I go to the shoe store. Oh, yeah, these Nikes tough. Like, you should wear these. And they go to, like, some, like, Power Ranger shoes or, like, right. Team Umizoomi shoes. Yeah, you like, what? Yeah. Like,
you want to
like,
wear the $299
Yeah. You like, some crazy shoes. Like, bruh, no. And it's like, it's them, though. They like that. And I want to teach kids, like, to change their wire. Like, yo, that's cool, bro. Like, to wear that, that's cool.
So because I was going to say, you know, you're obviously younger generations than us, but you kind of, you've seen growing up the impact of social media on kids' ways of thinking.
Yeah.
And social media will knock a kid down right quick with, mm-hmm. you know, other kids in school on social media. It's like that's where the bullying can happen sometimes and can maybe get some kid to change the way he wants to dress or the way he wants to look because of the criticism he gets in social media. So was that kind of the inspiration for you to kind of encourage self-expression and individuality through this book?
Yeah, encourage the people who's bullying and who has been bullied, you know what I'm saying, to rewire their brains to see a different way. Because, you know, sometimes kids only see certain things, so their vision is narrow-based. And so they only know what they see a little bit.
Yeah.
And they haven't been through too much. They haven't gone so far. They haven't had so many years under their belt. So they only know a little bit. And with this book, I want to be able to influence the kids I can reach out to a little bit. And if they bully them, they give them a different viewpoint that it's okay to be different. Different is okay. Like, just because something different, you shouldn't make fun of it. You should accept it with love, peace, and kindness. And the people who's being bullied, teach them how to teach the people that's being bullied. I mean, that's bullying, you know what I'm saying? Rather than do aggression, because sometimes aggression doesn't work. Sometimes if you rewire them, it helps impact that person and the person that he can impact somebody else. Now it's like a domino effect. Now you're continuously impacting somebody else.
Paying forward. It sounds a lot like a culture in the Bills locker room that Sean McDermott preaches. You gotta be you, that's fine, but you got to be the best you, right? Yeah. That's kind of what it's all about in this culture. I mean, that it seems to – you can understand why you've thrived in McDermott's culture here. They don't care if you're a quiet lead-by-example guy or Jordan Phillips guy waving his arms on the line of scrimmage. You know what I mean? It's okay to be you, and we're going to help you be the best. Is that kind of part of the reason you just signed a new contract, part of the reason you went from where you began your career as a sixth late-round draft pick to starting on opening day of your rookie year and even going beyond that? It's that same kind of attitude, correct?
Yeah. Just wanted to continue being a part of this culture, the loving culture, the family-like culture, the open arms-like culture, the be you and no judgment type of culture. And yeah, you're right. McDermott being the hard point, being the best version of you, no matter who you are, they just want to see the best of you. You know what I'm saying? They're not trying to make you or craft you into this type of person to fit the team. No, whatever you are, bring this part of the team, then they're going to make you the best version of you and to help you be the best version of you, my bad. And that's the culture that you want to be a part of that allows you to be you.
Well, the best version of you is looking pretty good right now. I mean, you got a new contract. You got a book coming out.
How important was that in this project? How did you tell your agent? I mean, you tell us now that it's all signed and done. You say, listen, I want to be here. This is kind of where I've thrived. They've given me this. How much of that was in it? Because when push comes to shove, you got to look out for your family.
Yeah.
And I know the Bills thought the world of you, and they wanted to bring you back. Obviously, the contract says that. But how much did you tell your agent on a personal level, like, hey, if we can make this work, I really want to stay here?
A lot. No, we ain't talk too much about that. I'm going to keep it a buck. But right. Realistically, I did say, like, I do want to be here. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I didn't really say, like, every day, you know what I'm saying, or all the time.
Right, I'm not saying it's here or no play. You didn't say that, right?
Nah, nah.
Yes, you can't do that.
But I was just, like, telling them, like, yeah, I do want to be a part of here. Like, I like it here. The guys are great, and the love is genuine. Like, I told them, I do want to be a part of here for, like, the next few years of my life. You know what I'm saying? I want to continue to grow here. I want to continue to win here. Super Bowls here. I come out, continue to build relationships here with you guys here and whoever else that comes a part of this culture. You know what I'm saying? So I did communicate with that with them.
Well, congratulations again on the contract, on the book, which is called Stylish Safari, The Adventures of being you. You got Benny the Bobcat in there, a whole bunch of animals. It's Christian's first children's book, and it'll be, I know you can get it on bookshop.org beginning April 22nd, but they do have a pre-order tab there as well. So if you want to pre-order the book before it's even out, go to bookshop.org. I know they've got it there. Stylish Safari, the title of Christian's book. All the best to you, man. We're getting ramped up. We'll see you out there on the field real soon.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very Christian cool. Benford joining us. Stylish Safari is the book.
I did want to get to that James Cook stuff that Sal brought up, because I've kind of gotten to this point, I've written off the franchise tag for a Bean right. McDermott management. That duo has never used it. The last time the Bills have used the franchise tag was 2016. We're also at a point in the NFL, a lot of teams really do not use it. They get it done or they kind of battle it out. Cincinnati is the only team I've seen in recent years that seems to be in love with the idea of using it.
Yeah,
because so they don't like paying people.
I like to think of the franchise tag not just as a franchise tag and you play on it for the year. It's an extension to extension talks.
That's also right, because the last time
you
the Bills did
use it. You keep a player
on
the roster, and then you use it to actually get the extension done.
The last time the Bills used it, 2016, Cordy Glenn. Exactly that. They end up signing a five-year extension with him
or
later that offseason. He never played a game under that tag.
Even what Carolina did. Say extension talks are not getting anywhere. And Carolina, with Josh Norman, cuts bait.
Yeah, we're not. You don't really see. I was going to say, outside of quarterbacks,
the franchise
they play
tag,
under the tag typically.
The franchise tag is generally meant to give you the protection of the player being on the roster no matter what for one more year. But you continue your extension talks anyway. Like
so,
what the Giants end up doing with Saquon Barkley, for example, and it just it's what happened. Speaking of quarterbacks, you know, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
They were threatening with the franchise tag the entire time on that one.
And really, for I'd argue, the good teams, it is just giving you a window.
It's giving you a window while giving you the safety of the player will be on the roster next year.
Yeah.
Let's make it longer.
Funny enough, Cordy Glenn, who was an offensive tackle, his tag was $13.7 million. That's right in the ballpark of what James Cook would be. I don't know that exactly, but it's around $13
million. Yes.
But I will tell you, and Sal brought up, that price tag is under what Cook wants.
Right.
But it's we would assume is probably way closer to what the Bills want. Would they be a team if this goes to where it may be heading? Again, nothing confirmed there, but the fact that Bean went from, I don't know, could get done next week to a month later going, I don't know, could get done sometime this year, points to they're not close. I mean, I think Bean outright said they're not really close to an extension.
And if they're not close, that's what the franchise tag is for a year from now.
Yeah.
That's the other part. We have an entire season to play. Could he end up playing better or worse? Guess what? If it's better and you want to try to keep him around, we're going to need to slap that franchise tag if we want to keep him. And the discussions are, they're getting closer, but we're not done yet. This is how you go ahead and, like, you go to your college professor and say, I was sick. Here's the documentation that you need.
I was sick.
Then you go to the doctor and go, I need you to write me up a note.
It's just
I smashed my hip on a counter or something.
I like this conversation because Sal also brought up, too, and I bring this point up a lot with callers, and it's brought up with really everybody. They have not been in this position. This specific position at running back, they have never had to have a tough conversation of, like you brought up the value. Can we afford Cook? I think Sal's right. They want to bring back basically everybody. They are one of the leaders in draft, develop, resign. They showed it this year. But do they have the capital to do it? And also, does he just value himself out? Tremaine Edmonds did that. Gabe Davis did that.
And this is something that I brought up with Sal in the first hour. It's not about value to me more than it is about affordability, which value has its place in the discussion. But do the Bills see James Cook's value rising to a point where they know they cannot work the books to keep him?
Yeah.
You have a certain price point that you're able to afford, and you might be knowing that Cook is going to ascend past that, especially with his demands starting where they are. And you say you play the entire season. Well, does he price himself out? Because it was interesting. Tremaine Edmonds' last season here in Buffalo, he started looking a little bit more complete of a player. And I remember saying, I'm going to miss him when he's not here.
Like, he's as good as gone
because
he's actually earning himself an interesting payday, considering his age going into free agency and the fact that this is actually his best year as a Bill, his last year. So I kind of got very quickly into, well, he's not going to be here next year.
Yeah, that I do remember his
Terrell Bernard immediately really made me eat my words about saying I might miss him, miss Edmonds when he's gone. Talk about all sorts of insurance right there. But the same thing could happen here with Cook. You play the season out, you watch, and if he's playing as well as he did last year, for example, with the amount of big runs that he's breaking, the fact that he was well above his average in touchdowns.
Well, that's the thing, too. They started to use him 10 yards in, where before that was, it was Josh Allen. That was it. He had, of course, the big plays as well, but his iconic play of this year is a fourth and goal play.
Fourth and goal with effectively your season on the line.
Yeah.
At that moment.
So you're in a tough situation.
And you
don't know where the running back market is going. The thing I look at too, if we're just going to use baseline $13 million a year, I don't know what the franchise tag is, but baseline $13 million, that would make him the fifth highest paid running back per year.
And the thing is that if this season has to play out, I would be ready to start saying if he's playing well, I'm going to miss him.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to play yourself out of Buffalo's price point, and that's fine. It's not something that, like, you spite a player for trying to maximize his contractual value at that point. It is, I know this team can't afford you the way that you're playing.
Also, fourth. I think I said fifth. It'd make him the fourth highest.
Yeah. And is James Cook playing in a level that deserves the fourth highest paid running back in the NFL? I don't know. If next season happens and he puts up another good year, though, you might look at it and be considering of that notion, but also realizing if he plays like that, his value goes up.
This is one of the contract negotiations I'd love to be a fly on the wall, because we talked about it last week with callers as well. Then you're all of a sudden getting into that, 44% offensive snap rate? And it's like, well, is that less wear and tear, or is the team telling him, We don't value as highly as you're saying. Again, and also, and this is a point too. I've heard a few callers bring up. I don't know if necessarily any of us have brought up enough, but the $15 million is just a starting point, and it's also the last number we've heard.
Yes, we have not heard anything different.
So, and that's where we're all going. There's a likelihood that that's just the starting number for Cook. That ultimately, it's like we're going to go a little high so that we end. Well, maybe the fifth highest paid running back, fourth highest paid running back, around $13 million.
And the thing is now for the Bills, do you have the roster construction capable of having one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league and one of the highest paid running backs?
Go back to that Joe Shane clip, which, you know, has been infamous for him, but I think ultimately was kind of right. Mm-hmm. I'm not paying a quarterback a ton of money to hand off to a running back who's making a ton of money.
Yeah. And ultimately, that is what the league looks at running backs as.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it is what it is nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
2013, like they were in 2000.
I don't like waiting 12 years.
No.
And yet, I'm respectful of the fact that I've got partners downstairs that still don't have one. Impatience is good for you. I think it's healthy to a degree, because you know all of us still feel it, you know. And if I had burned through four coaches, then it would be completely different, because it's like, okay, now let's see what you can do, and now let's see. I know what we can do. I know that we work to put ourselves in position to win, and we all get credit for that, and that's all you can do. And I hate it that every year you just have to start back over again. But you know what? This is not for the meek.
Mm-mm.
You know?
No. And when we win it, we're going to start all over again and try to do it again.
Yeah, that euphoria will last about a minute.
It's Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti. We have a window with Lamar Jackson. I want to win now. I like one thing he said there. Impatience is good. We said impatience is good. I want to win now. You have a superstar freak show quarterback. You should be talking like that.
You should be impatient.
How about the Ravens? I don't like a 12-year drought. Super Bowl drought. I don't like a 12-year Super Bowl drought.
Huh.
I mean, like, we know something about droughts.
And, yeah.
It's not
from the Super Bowl.
No. But I don't like waiting 12 years. We got a window. I know what we can do. I know we work to put ourselves in a position to win. We all get credit for that. That's all you can do. I hate every year. You have to start over again. It's something I've said a few times about the Bills and their cap. Sometimes I think Brandon Bean talks like the job is to keep it sustainable for 5 to 6 to 7 years. And that is part of the job. At some point in those 5 to 6 to 7 years, there'll be pockets of a year or two where you do steal from 1 year to give to the other. And whether it's void years in contracts, and maybe we've seen them start to do that, adding a couple of void years here and there in some of these new deals. But want to win now. Every year you don't win it, you should push a little more in. And the Bills should be chasing the Josh Allen bet every year. And the fact that we're this far in, it should be pushed pretty hard to chase that Super Bowl and get that one. And there's no guarantee, I know that, but I wouldn't want them to slow play it in the interest of, you know, 2029. Don't have to care.
Totally.
Don't have to care about 2029. You are MVP caliber prime.
Right now.
Right now. 803-0550. Not to say that they're, you know, expressly against that idea, but I don't want – it's not the time for prudence, I guess is what I would say. It's time for reckless optimism and all hands on deck. Jerry and Kenmore.
Hope those aren't just platitudes.
Guys. Hey, Jerry.
You know, I like one of the things you need in an old guy correspondent is, you know, you've reached that point when you say something your father or grandfather used to say and everyone around you goes, what did you just say? You know what I'm saying? Like the other day I said, are we going out to clean the shed? And I said, what's this we? Do you have a mouse in your pocket? And everybody around me had no idea what I was talking about. I think some of those sayings need to come back, and they're a good sign of the old guy. But I want to talk about Cook. I think we have him where we want him, and that we have all the leverage here, and that we have him technically for 3 years on the rookie deal, and then potentially franchise, and something will get worked out because we hold almost all the advantages in this. But what I really want to talk about is the defense. I think it's time to draft players that are ready to play, not guys that have a higher upside or are projects. I think we have to plug guys into the lineup more readily than we ever have in the past.
Okay. No projects, just guys that are ready.
Yep. They need to play this year.
Yeah. Thanks, Sherry. How easy is that to tell the difference? Some guys are thought of as his ceiling is higher. You know, if the Bills, I guess what you're saying is they come up on the clock and they've got two players. Like, we think player A can play now. We think player B in 2 years might be better. Who should we draft? That's a good question.
That's a good question.
That is a good question.
I think, the examples we have of drafts prior. Have they really swung at the high ceiling, low floor guy? Like, I kind of, is that Cook?
They traded down twice before they took Cook, which would be an indicator that, I mean, anytime you trade down and then take a player, you're going to tell me you don't love anyone right here. No one is above the rest.
And would we say Rousseau, high floor, higher ceiling, but high floor? Boogie Basham. You're not really picking Boogie Basham because of the high ceiling he has. They thought he was going to walk in here and contribute right away. And he was bad. AJ Epenesa. High floor.
I guess. I guess I'm just not sure if anybody can really in the
midst of it?
Yeah, ahead of
in
time.
In the thralls of it?
Tell me. You might say this guy's got a higher ceiling, and that's still a projection. What happens when the other guy ends up doing better?
Yeah.
You know who was the high ceiling pick? Josh.
Mm. Yes.
Josh was the project, raw ability. We like this and this and this. He's got to change some things, but highest ceiling. Quarterback's a great conversation for this. The project quarterback that's not going to be ready right away versus this guy's pro ready. Right? The thought was Mac Jones would be pro ready. Okay. Then he went and he played right away. And he looked to be pro ready, but there wasn't a very high ceiling there. And, you know, now Mac Jones is where Mac Jones is. 803-0550. Thanks for the phone call. And 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Nate, it's still overcast out there.
Yeah. I was hoping it might. I don't know. I don't even know what to hope for, to be honest. I just want to be in the other side of this fast. I just need sunlight. I don't necessarily. I'm not asking for 75. Just
some sun.
48 hours of sustained sunlight.
Yeah. Hey, heads up. Tomorrow is the final piece of steel for the stadium.
Mm.
They're putting the final piece of steel on for the structure. So it's a big day. And I've reached out to the Bills, like, well, let's get an update. What are our timelines right now? So we'll see what we hear back from them on that. But the new stadium is, you know, closer and closer. There's a story of Pro Football Talk. Tampa is the next team likely going to go for major renovations. Not a new stadium, I don't think, but major renovations on the horizon for Tampa. Let me ask you this about the Bills and their upcoming schedule. Have you been to the Atlanta Stadium? And to anybody out there that's listening,
yes.
Or anybody on the chat, you've been to Mercedes?
Not for a game, but I've been inside, yes.
The Mercedes-Benz Stadium?
Yep.
What'd you go in for that wasn't a game?
Oddly enough, it was a trade show.
Okay.
Yeah.
How was the stadium?
Unbelievable.
Really?
Unbelievable.
Is it, what I'm getting at is, the Bills' road schedule this year is not incredible. It might be one of the weaker ones. There are two stadiums that Josh Allen and the Bills, in the Josh Allen era, have never played in.
Is Atlanta one?
It's Carolina. There's three. Carolina and Atlanta. The other one's San Francisco because that game got
that's
moved.
That's right. Yeah, it got moved.
So Carolina and Atlanta, he has not played in those stadiums. Not that that's a reason to go, but just if you're looking for a Bills road trip, is that stadium cool enough to say,
oh,
I'd like
yeah.
to go see it?
Yes.
Yes?
The Concord, I mean, yes.
Okay.
Worthy.
When you're there for a trade show, are you imagining what it's like to watch a football game there and thinking, they got the circular Jumbotron right up top and the camera lens roof?
Mm-hmm. It's a great stadium.
Okay.
Great stadium. I would say, again, having not visited all of them to have a thorough opinion on it, I would say it's top five. It's also visually on television. There's good camera angles in there. Really good camera angles. Is that maybe something I would say that I am maybe most excited about with this new stadium is it was built with TV in mind, where I don't believe the current stadium. I don't love night games are decent in that stadium, but I wouldn't say a built for TV stadium, the current one.
Right.
The new one, they talked about, like, this is going to be built for HDTV.
Right. 803-0550. Scott and Cheektowaga quickly before the break. Hey, Scott.
Morning, boys. My suggestion is the Bills continue to keep playing chicken with their running back. And I only say that because you don't negotiate unless you're in a position of power. Previous caller alluded to that. Nearly every single team in the league right now either has a young, promising, cost-controlled running back or an overpaid free agent, and the well's dry. But you could probably hold out a little longer, get him for single digits a year per million. Bo Jackson was the last time somebody sat out for an entire year.
Le'Veon Bell.
9 years ago.
Le'Veon Bell before that. Since then.
I beg your pardon.
Yep, but that's okay, yep.
But I want a cost-controlled running back. I think that you played chicken with the guy. I think you're going to get what you want. And the guy from Florida who said that his house was overpriced, I never thought of that. I think he might be right. I think he's doing this is all leverage. You could probably get him for about $9 million a year, and that's what I would do.
Well, thanks, Scott. One thing about that, are we sure the Bills haven't offered $9 million? And because two things are possible. This is where the binary nature of, I've got someone on Twitter saying, like, if Cook hadn't, you know, Cook went public on social media and coincidence, he's the one that's not signed, they must be annoyed. I don't think that has anything to do with it at all. Why is he not signed? Because the Bills have a value on the position. He has a value on his own number.
Well, do we know that they have a value on the position or just
on
the
him,
player?
Sure,
yeah,
sure.
I don't know. I don't know that we have evidence.
It's just like
historically.
It's just like the draft. Why does Brandon Bean want to keep it all in house? He wants, like every NFL team, to control the message. Every NFL team controls the message everywhere. The NFL is unbelievable. Every single draft pick that is picked in 3 weeks is going to be the highest guy on their board, and everyone's thrilled with their draft. You never hear about the ones that got away. It's everybody loves everything they've ever done. And with Bean here, it's not disingenuous. Why do they want to keep it in-house? So the Bills can control the message. He'd be asked about Cook, and if Cook hadn't tweeted anything, what's different? I'm going to keep that in-house. Would he still say, you know, we're not close? He might.
He might.
When it came to Gabe Davis, Gabe didn't tweet anything about it, and they still, were they annoyed at Gabe Davis? They just didn't sign him.
Yeah.
They didn't think he was worth what he was asking for. So I don't think they're annoyed with Cook. It could be that they will pay $9 million and he won't accept that. It could be that he would accept $9 million and they won't pay it. And the reality is we just kind of don't know. We're left on the outside until there's a few more steps taken down this road. Thanks for the phone call, Scott.
Back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, asking you today, where do you put the emphasis in the Bills draft? More on their pass rush or more on their coverage? We're expecting it to be a defensive-heavy draft. Where does your emphasis lie if you were making these picks for Buffalo? Back to the phones we go at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, and to Kevin in Hamburg. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Sure thing.
I want to bring up about, I like the idea of secondary, because I think even though a defensive line is important, if a quarterback is worried about throwing on a secondary, then even if the defensive rush don't get there, they know you're still worried about throwing on a secondary if you get good secondary guys. And I'll give you an example I'm talking about. Take, for example, just an example of the Niners when they were great. They knew opposing quarterbacks did not want to throw on Ronnie Lott's or people like that. So if the rush didn't get there, it was going to get there because you did not want to throw on those type of people. If they're good enough to make a quarterback throw, I'm not going to throw on that guy. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Shut down corners and stuff. Yeah, I get it.
I think most teams are willing to live with a pass rush that forces the quarterback to at least get it out on time.
Or
right?
Hurry his throw.
Right? So the baseline is that the guy's got to drop back, and if he's supposed to be throwing it, he's got to throw it, or he's going to go down. Most teams can live with a pass rush like that, and that's kind of where the Bills have been living, existing for, you know, 5 or 6 years now. So that means your DB's got to cover for the, you know, 1.2, or, you know, second and a half or 2.5 seconds, whatever the number is. And if the ball's out, the quarterback doesn't want to throw it, and he goes down, or he's got to run around. So if you can live with a pass rush that's at that level, yeah, your DBs can thrive in that. And that's when it kind of works hand in hand. And then also, when you're living like that, you can see it. You can see it. Then the coach has got to have a handle on what they're going to do. Out of this formation and this personnel, you got to be on it, because then they say, listen, they're going to do this or this. When they're in this personnel grouping and this formation, this down and distance, they're either going to throw it here or they're going to throw it here. And then you teach your guys to be ready for that. And then you win games like that. That's when your pass rush is working, your DBs are working, and then you're – when you've got just enough, your coaches have to be on it and give them the tools to win, because, you know, nobody's beating anybody physically in that scenario. And then, you know, so all of those things got to be in place. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And if you can just get one game wrecker to make the quarterback have to hurry, okay, that changes everything. So, yeah, I get it. You know, the DBs can help out. They can cover these guys up. Quarterback's back there patting the ball, and then the rush makes him move around, and then the play comes apart. I get all of that. But, the absolute bare minimum you can live with is the ball's got to come out at least on time. Right? I don't know that we've been there enough.
Last year you would say you were not.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the phones and to Johnny in Buffalo next. What's up, Johnny?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I kind of agree with the point on taking a guy in the secondary. I mean, we've invested just countless assets in the defensive line over the past 5 years, you know, whether it's, you know, Ed Oliver, Greg Rousseau, A.J. Epinesa, and then you're, you know, signing Von Miller and now Joey Bosa, and, you know, you've signed the two free agents. Yes, they're suspended, but you've extended Oliver, too. So I can't see how we can't just plug and play for the first six games until those other guys come back. If anybody's good at plug and playing, it's McDermott. That's what he thrives at, is getting the most out of whoever he's putting on the field. And to put more assets into this defensive line without trading up significantly to get, you know, one of the best guys there, I think would be a mistake. And, you know, we have to address that secondary. It is awful, you know, with the exception of Benford. You know, I think we definitely need help. You know, hopefully Bishop takes that next step at safety. But opposite Benford, you know, obviously Teron Johnson's great as well. But what do we got there? And, you know, to your guys' point, if the best player available is a guard or a running back or something along those lines, I know you said, you know, you might have to trade back or something, but if you've got a guy you're looking at and you've got him graded as, you know, one of the top 10 guys in the draft that on your board and you're looking at him at pick 30 or you can trade up to get him, I don't see how you don't do it, especially with a guy like Josh Allen. I mean, look at what he did last year with what many people called preseason. Perhaps the worst talent on the offensive side of the ball. Yes, James Cook did well, but we still didn't get a ton out of Keon Coleman last year as a rookie. We got some flashes. Shakir did well. Kincaid, we're still waiting to pop. But other than that, we still don't have that elite talent on the offensive side of the ball. We're hoping Josh Palmer does well, but let's add weapons. And I can't see us just investing more assets in that defensive line. It would just to drive me crazy. So thank you guys, and have a good day.
All right. I get it, Johnny. I mean, to your point, they have made a lot of early draft investments in defensive linemen with mixed rates of success. I can't get on your train for offense as an emphasis over any of these defensive positions, though, because all you have to do is look at the numbers from last season. I mean, the Bills, after the playoffs were over, led the league in points scored with the crew they had last year and made some similar type acquisitions with Joshua Palmer and Laviska Shenault, who, you know, you could argue Joshua Palmer is a bigger playmaker than Matt Collins, at least over his career he has been. Laviska Shenault is probably here more for special teams than receiver, but it's another guy in the mix. And I think they believe a healthy Dalton Kincaid will add something to the offensive side of the ball this year after playing most of last year on two bad wheels. Your defense was 29th in third down defense. They were in the bottom third of the league in red zone defense. They were middle of the pack as a run defense, and completion percentage against and passer rating against was in the bottom third of the league as well. All of that has to get better in short order, especially with the caliber of offenses you got coming in here next year. Philadelphia, Cincinnati, Kansas City, Baltimore. I mean, you better load your defense up with some talent that you can put on the field sooner rather than later, or you're going to be in a lot of shootouts, and that's not where you want to live. So I can't get behind looking for more weapons when the Bills tried to do some of that in free agents. I'm not saying ignore offense in the draft, but the vast majority of the picks in this class have got to go to the defensive side of the ball.
The simple fact of the matter is Josh elevates all those guys on that side of the ball, both on the offensive line and at the edges. All the skill guys are better. All those guys had as good a year as they've ever had last year getting catching it from Josh, with the exception of what, Amari Cooper, who got here after nine games with eight games left, you know, that kind of thing. You still feel like you've got to feel like you got a lot left under the hood with Keon. You're going to get some more consistent play out of him the more he plays. Obviously, if he's got to stay healthy and all of that stuff. Khalil Shakir is everything you thought he would be. Josh Palmer, well, we'll see. He seems to be a better option at wideout than Mac Hollins was, and we love Mac. So, no,
you can do more on the offensive side with Josh with less. You can't do more with less for anybody on the defensive side. Maybe Joey Bosa changes that equation when he plays, but right now, I mean, nope. I don't think none of the callers or anybody, we all mention him. I don't catch a lot of faith.
Well, I don't think people feel comfortable stamping him as a sure thing because of his injury history.
Yeah, he's been injured. And now when he plays, you expect it. Yeah, you expect him to be that game record guy. But now he's a 10-year vet after being injured for a lot of his career. So you're thinking, it's not going to get healthier. So it's a legitimate concern. There's nobody on that defense that is a game wrecker. There hasn't been for quite some time. So I have a hard time getting on board with best player available, even if, you know, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. I'd say best player available no matter what defensive position he plays.
Yeah.
I can't get away from that right now. I just feel like the roster's sitting at a spot where you can't ignore it any further. Yeah.
We always take mock drafts with a grain of salt, but our good friend Field Yates, who is a weekly visitor on this show during the season, has put together a 2-round mock draft. And he has the Bills at pick 30, trading back into round 2 to pick 38, and then moving back up a few spots to 34 in a second trade with the Giants to take Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle of Michigan. He apparently thinks he will be there as late as the top of round 2. And then later in the round, knowing the Bills still have two other second-round picks, he has the Bills taking cornerback Jacob Parrish at 62, the second of the last of the second-round picks. 56, he's got them taking Ohio State edge rusher JT Tuimoloau. So he goes defensive tackle, edge rusher, then corner. He picked Jacob Parrish out of Kansas State, who might be one of my favorite corners in the whole draft. So Field's kind of on board with us, or at least most of the callers, which was D-line, 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 then worry about corner. We had a few dissenting votes for cornerback first because the pool is deemed to be thinner. But it's an interesting take here by Field on a day where we're discussing this.
I've got this. Another Mox has taken, with the exact picks we've got so far, no trades, Derek Harmon, the defensive lineman from Oregon. He's an edge rusher. Then safety Andrew Makuba. Yeah. I'm sorry, from Texas. Eric Iyanmanor, wide receiver from Stanford.
Yeah.
Then they got Ashton Gilote from Louisville. And then Shmail Mondon Jr. is a linebacker.
Oh,
out of Georgia.
Smile Mondon. From Georgia.
So, you know, three defenders or four defenders out of the first five picks with a wide receiver sprinkled in.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of conversations right now, of course, with Tet McMillan, right, from Arizona, as far as being the wide receiver one in this class. And personally for me, you know, I would take Keon Coleman 100 times over 100 times comparatively to Tet McMillan. As far as just athleticism, what I've seen as far as the highs, what I've seen as far as the floor. And in a situation right now where Keon's going to have Josh Allen throwing him the ball, hopefully for the next 5-plus years, at least in Buffalo, I'm really excited for his future. And I know you mentioned the injury, but when he can get healthy and really become that wide receiver one, I really think this is a young player that we're going to be talking about that's going to be teasing with 1,000 yards for a long time every single year in his career. That's just my opinion.
That is Ryan Fowler yesterday with Mike Schoep. Ryan Fowler of the Draft Network. Love when he's on. We've had him on. I think he's
wonderful. Had him on this show, and I want to have him on again.
Yeah, I love him as a draft expert. I do like, though, and I said this to Jeremy this morning, too, off air. I like that he is not going to follow the normal trajectory of everybody. Like, even his running back class. He has Ashton Jeanty number one. He's got Marion Hampton from North Carolina just a little below him.
Yeah.
And I've always liked that. That's a bit of a hot take.
Ready? That's a scout.
But he's a huge fan of Keon Coleman. I've always loved that.
What he is that a scout will lean into his convictions.
Yeah.
That's what I like is – and, of course, we've had those things within NFL front offices, and they tend to backfire sometimes. But when you lean into your convictions, you're being genuine. That's the part that I love, is that Ryan Fowler is not going to play us as a fool for anything.
like one Joshua Schmidt might today. But, yeah, I'm ready to powerbomb him, by the way, just so that everyone knows.
I didn't realize you were a big April Fool's guy. I really didn't.
I've kind of been made into it because my girlfriend is huge into April Fool's.
You did get got last year by her with probably an all-timer where she switched the salt and sugar and you put salt in your coffee.
She did it again this year. It's been revealed to me that this morning, while I was in the shower, she got out of bed, put salt in my coffee, and then went back to bed.
And then went back to bed.
It wasn't me. I was sleeping.
I thought initially she just put the salt in the bottom of the cup. But I was like, I looked in the cup. There's nothing there. And then she's like, yeah, I got up while you were in the shower, and I put the salt in the coffee, and then I went back to bed.
Incredible.
Yeah.
That's so good. Yeah. I mean, that would ruin salt in your drink.
That would ruin my day.
It has. I'm really tired because I haven't had coffee at all today. So we're vibing. It's great.
There we go.
It's great.
On the Keon Coleman thing, though.
Yeah, back to that.
Real quick. I disagree with it. Yes. So, I mean, like, that whole thing, like, I love that he will do it, but I disagree with it. I don't know. I don't see a path where Keon is a number one receiver.
It's not necessarily saying
like he's a bad receiver. I don't see a world where he's regularly like, you've got to stop Keon Coleman when you're scouting the Bills. I don't see that future.
I agree with you there. What I will say, though, is within the Bills system, I could see him being the longer term or like at least a short term X. He is the guy on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be okay. And he'll be okay there. He'll be fine. Probably get you 800 yards every year.
Yeah, and if he can all of a sudden start getting you to 6 to 10 touchdown range every year, you're happy with that return.
You're happy with that return. Eventually, you're happy with the return considering that you traded out of the first round, you got some draft capital, and you picked someone in the second round. It was your first pick of that draft class.
Yep.
And effectively, it was treated like a first rounder.
Well, as it should be.
But at the end of the day, are you okay with a guy who ends up getting you 800 yards a year and 6 to 10 touchdowns? I think that's a comfortable player.
I think for me,
it's a player that gives you probably a decent second contract that you're not breaking the bank for.
And I'm comfortable with him if he's not the main focus.
Exactly. And I don't think, like, last year he wasn't.
No. That's right. But I think that's where you will get other people. I know Jeremy's been on it. We've all taken callers as well of other receivers they want to see the Bills take because they will still not have that guy. And ultimately, when you do look at the successful years of the Bills these last few years, what did they have? They had that guy, Stephon Diggs. Once he got here, Allen went from a guy who was improving as a passer, kind of seemed to be like a do-it-all weapon, but wasn't that guy yet. Diggs gets here in 2020, and what does Allen become? For like four straight years, 4,000-yard passer. Great completion percentage, great passer rating, great QB rating, and he goes through the roof. Now, we saw last year without Diggs, he's still really good. Wins the MVP. I mentioned it. It's why I think the Bills are going to play on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But there was absolutely meat left on the bone.
There's meat left on the
passing game.
In the passing game, there's meat left on the bone. And it starts with Keon Coleman taking another step. Progression is never always linear.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's able to improve on 556 yards and four touchdowns, and be healthy, what you need to pick up on is you need a little bit of a better percentage from targets to receptions. He had 57 targets, only 29 catches.
Yeah, success rate there is under 50%.
He needs to get better with that. But his yards per target are great. I do think that he is going to be valuable on the outside. It is that success rate percentage. Yeah, that's all it is. You improve that, even getting to the median of about 50 to 60. That's where your players typically are going to end up at some point. If you can get up to 50%, those numbers change drastically.
I just wonder where his career is at. Career. I'm making it sound like he's been in the league for a while.
And that's the other thing. He's only year two. And is there a skill set there that makes a number one wide receiver? I don't know. But
I wonder what we're talking about if he doesn't get hurt.
Yes.
And the trajectory he was on.
The trajectory he was on probably finishes with 700 yards at least. And and at his best, if he plays the whole season, at his best challenges Khalil Shakir for leading the team in receiving yards this year.
Mm-hmm.
You would, if I said your rookie wide receiver challenges for the lead on your team in receiving yards,
You sign that check every single day of the
week. You're absolutely thrilled with where that goes.
And
now,
I don't want to call Keon Coleman the Bills wide receiver version of if man. I'm not going to. It is, all right, let's see what you can do now in year two. I think the Bills are going to believe that he's going to make that next step. Could there be a little bit more investment in the position? Yes. But I look at an entire defensive secondary and I go, there's probably more you need to do there. I look at an entire defensive line structure and I go, there's definitely more you need to do there. And those are my bigger concerns before I even look at the wide receiver room.
But looking at Keon,
I even look at James Cook with his uncertainty of will he, won't he? And I go, that might be something I might pay attention more to than the wide receivers.
Mm-hmm. But real quick, looking at Keon and where his season was going and why I bring up those two games leading into the injury, everything was going up. His offensive snap percentage, he got a lot of snaps in the Miami game, 91% of the offensive snaps. And then he kind of petered around like 60, low 70s. And then those big games that he had, the first one, Tennessee, in that 34-10 win, 7 targets, 4 catches, 125 yards. Offensive snaps 41, good for 74.5%. The next week, which I think is easily his best game as a rookie, it's the Seattle 31-10 win, 7 targets, 5 catches, 70 yards, a touchdown. He also forced a defensive pass interference call, great in the blocking. He seemed to be doing everything that day for the Bills offense. That seemed to be, for me, his sort of coming out party where he had scored before at that point, but that was where it was like, oh, okay, they're forcing him targets, and he's succeeding, and his snap percentage as well is up to 82.9%.
There's also something fascinating about Coleman's game that we weren't ready for. Big playability. He was the guy getting the big plays and flipping the field for you, even though he doesn't have a skill set that boasts that.
Yeah.
So, am I going to doubt Keon Coleman? No, because I look at the big playability that he was giving you this season. Even before the peak of what he was doing before he got injured, thanks, Jordan Poyer, traitor.
Well, even on that game, too, 2 targets, 1 catch, and you bring up the big plays, 21 yards.
Yeah. He was very often giving you that 20-yard play. And his impacts may have been limited. That Houston game, they don't get back into that game unless Keon Coleman takes that ball, shuffles all the way down the field. He was only 1 of 5 when it comes to targets for receptions. But that reception, 49 yards and a touchdown, brings Buffalo back into a game that they were very much ready to peter out of.
Yeah, they were. Oh, man, that game was
rough. That was dreadful.
Rough.
And Coleman, with his targets, there was not a good percentage there either. But I'll tell you right now, if he doesn't scamper home for that 49-yard touchdown, that's not even a game.
Mm-hmm.
People are turning it off in the third quarter, and we're done here.
And that's something Ryan Fowler brought up, too, with Keon, is how good of an athlete he is. And how kind of seamless he's able to move. That's my thing, too, is if he can fine-tune his route running and get that little bit more separation. That was the big problem with him early. Because even you bring up that Houston game.
Because what can you
the
teach?
The separation. Yeah, you can teach that.
You teach technique.
Yeah, you can teach that.
You can teach route running. You can't teach the size and ability that he has to go up and get it. Much like how you can't teach the speed that Xavier Worthy has, for example.
Yep.
The player that he's always going to be linked to. But what you can teach is the technique.
Yeah, it's just I look at those two games. I wonder what – because he misses 4, and then, of course, the Miami games. He plays, I think, for a lot of it, but effectively it's cut short because of the wrist injury.
It's not about that game necessarily more than it is the fact that he has to miss 4 more.
Yeah, I wonder what our conversation is about him. He has 556 yards. He misses 4 games.
Exactly.
And the trajectory he was on is he was going to start putting up 50-plus, not every game, but we were getting close to every game. He was going to start putting up 50-plus yards, you know, the big games here or there. He was really starting to show out. You know, they play an Indy team that I don't think necessarily was that great. San Francisco, they beat up on. Oh, that's a more of a winter wonderland game. But even the Rams game where, I mean, that's a shootout. You know, what does he look like? And then, of course, Detroit, same thing. I mean, he has his first game back, 1 catch, 64 yards.
And that's the play where Allen is rolling out to his right, buying time, waves Coleman down the field.
Yeah.
So, again,
Keon's got a bit of a rookie year is without the injury, what we're talking about with him.
He's got a big play element that people did not suspect. So, am I going to doubt Keon Coleman here? No. Because he already surprised me in a way that I never thought he had something in his game. So, hey, keep going. And I think the Bills see that too.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of a feeling that the coaches and the GM were a little frustrated with him, although they've then quickly gone back to, like, no, we're not really worried where he is at all. He's 21 years old. He's never dealt with an injury in his life. Like, that is going to be something that is going – you're going to have to deal with that the correct way. It's just I do I think he's like Brian Thomas Jr. level, or we're sitting here going like, guys, we're going to have to think about paying him in 3 years? No, I don't think so. But if he all of a sudden puts up 850, 900 yards – 7 touchdowns, we're not even having
a positive conversation about him. And what's the next step?
Yeah.
I think we should still have that conversation.
It quickly becomes, if you want a receiver, it is the Josh Palmers that they added.
Yes.
Where it's like, yeah, we just need a guy that's a little bit better of a separator and has a little bit more of a pop ability that if he's got a window, he can take it a little bit more.
And I think they're conducting themselves in that manner.
In that manner that they think, ooh, what does this look like if he does miss those four games, plus also what we ultimately know is not the greatest recovery for him.